Let it in, surrender. Let it in, surrender. Let it in, surrender. Honor all you need to let it go.
This episode of the Point of Pain podcast is brought to you by Healthline Media. Healthline.com is a website I was visiting long before I ever wrote for them. It's something that comes up now every time I Google. I feel like whether I'm Googling about how to get rid of a cold or how to treat my psoriasis, there's always a Healthline article that comes up at the top of my search, which makes me feel really good because I know that it's a brand and it's a resource that I can truly trust, which is amazing. They have everything from real patients giving their own personal stories and tips to skilled professionals that really understand the science behind some of the most challenging conditions and conversations. They have articles on just about everything you could think of, from cancer to diabetes, psoriasis, of course, and even dealing with the emotional grief that comes from the loss of relationships. They aren't afraid to dig deep, talk about what truly matters, and share that with their audience. Speaking of their audience, it's over 120 million people a month, and that's just on their website. That doesn't include the variety of Facebook groups and Instagram followers that they have. On Facebook, they have groups for specific conditions, which I love so much, and I'm actually a member of their psoriasis community. I absolutely love and trust Healthline.com, and I know you will too. So be sure to bookmark it and refer to it often. And if you see it come up on your Google search, make sure you check it out. I know it will help you wherever you might be on this journey with your health and your life. Hey there, loves. My name is Nitika Chopra, and I am your host for the Point of Pain podcast, which is your chance to sink into a safe space where we explore the highs and the lows of life and the pain that comes with it in a way that truly gets us through our most challenging moments. So today I have one of my closest soul sisters on the show, Jennifer Rassiopi. She is an astrologer. She is an expert with the cycles of the moon, and she's so many other things that I can't wait to share with you today. She's also a cancer survivor, and that is really what led her to understanding the phases of the moon in the way that she does. I cannot wait for you to hear her story. It is a story that when I heard it, I was knocked off my feet, to be honest with you. I felt like for years after hearing her story, every time I would share it with somebody, because she's very open about her story and talks about it often, anytime I would meet someone and tell them about Jen and tell them her story, I would immediately have tears in my eyes. I just felt so overwhelmed by understanding as much as I possibly could the amount of bravery and brilliance and strength and empathy she had to have in order to get through the health journey that she had been through. The things that we talk about on this episode are really, you know, near and dear to my heart because they're definitely things Jen and I as friends have spoken about many times. We talk about everything from the fact that we're both not going to have children and what that's been like in the process of that. What happens when people can't show up for you with your health journey? We just talk about how we go from, you know, hysteria and feeling like a victim to feeling like the wisdom that we got out of our health struggles was really worth it at the end of it, even though it was incredibly painful. So honoring both sides of that. Jen decided after learning that, you know, the moon and the stars and the planets could really help her, she decided to take all of that and combine her love for evidence-based science with the profound understanding of those ancient sciences of the stars. She ended up becoming a Duke-certified integrative health coach. She is a board-certified holistic health counselor, a registered yoga teacher, a woman's hormonal health coach. She has deeply immersed herself in the transformational studies of positive psychology. She's also consulted at a hedge fund and kind of combined all of these different sides of herself to create a successful business, but then also to help her clients create successful businesses. So that's something that she's helped me with a lot, and just understanding how the planets and the stars and the moon cycles really connect to the phases and the cycles of my own life and how to use them to benefit me in business and in my personal life. She's just one of my favorite people on the planet. So I can't wait for you to hear more about Jennifer Rassiopi. Jennifer Rassiopi, I am so excited that you are on the show with me today. Thank you for being here.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so pumped because I feel like one of the reasons why I wanted to start this podcast was because I have such incredibly inspiring women and people in my life like you. And I get to know a lot of the behind the scenes of things that people don't always get to hear. And you're one of those people that I feel like I've just been in awe of you and your story since the moment we met. So I want to just dive right in and really uncover some of the things about, you know, honestly, people read your about page and feel like, holy crap, I can't believe she's been through all of that. But I know there's even more. And for those people who haven't been able to read your about page yet, who are probably going to run and do that after they listen to this episode, you work in the astrology world. You're an astrologer by profession, and you also work with people on like the moon cycles and the phases of the moon. But that has become such a trendy thing these days. And I know firsthand that like trendiness is not why you started doing this at all.
Definitely not.
Right? Definitely not. So can you tell me why you started working in this world of astrology and the moon?
Well, yeah, it was 20 years ago. There wasn't, you know, we didn't have Facebook at that time. We didn't have social media. We didn't have Instagram. I didn't have a blog. There, you know, the internet was just really becoming a thing. So it certainly wasn't a trend online, and it really wasn't, you know, a party trick at all. Not that following the phase of the moon is a party trick, but I think you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I found myself on this journey really out of crisis. I had the awakening of having cancer at a young age, and I had cancer when I was 18 and 19 years old. Gynecological cancer that led me into premature menopause due to a radical hysterectomy at age 18. Actually, it was age 19. And after I had, they call it parachute menopause, is one of the terms they use when you surgically enter menopause. So menopause, for those of you who don't know, is technically when you're 1 year past your last period. And typically it happens in your early to mid 50s, late 40s. And there's a whole decade that happens before that, which is called perimenopause, which is when your body gently wanes in fertility and in hormonal resonance. And it's a gradual process of ceasing ovulation and menstruation that eventually leads to one complete year with no period, thus menopause. For women who enter menopause due to surgery, surgical menopause, where their ovaries are removed, it happens overnight, like you're in menopause. And it's a radical change to the body. It's so profound. I can't even really put words to it. And for me, it happened on the heels of a cancer diagnosis. And it happened before I had even turned 20. So my body was just actually getting used to having some sense of a hormonal rhythm, some sense of a cycle and a period and an ovulatory cycle. My body never really totally adjusted to my menstrual years because I had lots of dysfunction, hence the cancer. The removal of my ovaries overnight sent me into what we call surgical menopause, which is an expedited entrance into menopause, which is really hard for any woman at any age, and particularly hard for a teenager. And after that had happened, I was kind of just, no one really explained it to me. You know, the doctor said like, hey, you won't be able to have children, but they didn't tell me what menopause was. They did put me on a hormone, but still it made no sense. Like I never came back to feeling like who I was before that surgery. I had no reference point for who I'd become, and I just didn't get it. And along my journey, one of the things I started to do was sync my life to the phases of the moon. And it was out of a lot of searching and seeking. Again, there was no mind, body, green or well and good at the time. There was no Bell Life. Nothing had really blossomed at that point. It was the 90s. And so I just went on a journey and I just started basically going everywhere and anywhere I felt called to go looking for answers. And one of the places I found myself serendipitously was a metaphysical bookstore in Lake Tahoe. And I met a woman there who was like a Wiccan mystic. And she did a tarot reading for me and told me that, yeah, one of the things that was going to heal me the most in terms of just finding rhythm in my life was syncing my life with the phases of the moon. That's been basically the last 2 decades of my life.
You know, when I first heard your story, we became friends. I don't even remember how many years ago it was. I think it was about 5 years ago now. I swear for the last 5 years, every time I try to tell versions of your story, I get so, I mean, even just thinking about it now, you know, I just get so emotional because I just can feel how exhausting and daunting that experience must have been. And I know so many people listening have probably been through, you know, their own crises in their own way, right? Whether it's health or divorce or finances or the loss of a loved one. It's like that bring you to your knees moment. You know, and it sounds like that moment lasted for a while. It wasn't like, oh, you have one diagnosis or one surgery and then like you have the moment and you move on. You know, it's like it's an ongoing process. How did you deal with that? I mean, it sounds like you sought out for solutions a lot, but what was that like? Can you bring us back there a little bit? What was that experience like?
As humans, we suffer.
Yeah.
And there's really no shortcut around it. You know, like, it's a little dismal to say, so bear with me, but you know, no one's getting out of here alive. We all live in impermanent bodies that at some point are going to fail us or something's going to go wrong. And so at that time, I was suffering very prematurely in a really abrupt and over the top way for a teenager. You know, I had 2 cancer diagnoses. I was launched into menopause. I didn't have a great family connection at the time. You know, my family, I was a product of divorce. My parents just didn't get along, even in their divorce. I was still a little bit of a ping pong and a war going on between them. And no one could really show up for me the way that I needed. Everyone did the best they could. You know, people were there, but it wasn't, no one knew how to be there for me. It was isolating. It was lonely. It was ostracizing. I went to my freshman year of college. Just a shell of my former self. I had a lot of panic, a lot of anxiety. I launched into a full-blown panic disorder. I was in a clinical depression. There were some serious psychological ramifications for what I was going through. I did my best to see therapists. I started learning yoga out of books because it hadn't really caught trend at that time. I thought really very much that I must have had like some pervasive candida, because what else would explain like all the vaginal dryness and vaginal itching that goes along with parachute menopause? Mm-hmm. And so like I tried to treat myself with these, like read them from out of the books at the health food store, you know, like cut this out, cut that out, cut this out, cut that out sort of thing. So I just did the best I could. And quite honestly, I was just a hot mess. I was a little bit of a raging lunatic.
Yeah.
You know, I had highs, I had lows. I was mad. I was angry. I was trying to keep it all together and be a normal teenager. I'd go to rock concerts. I'd go to parties. I tried to do what I could to fit in and acclimate and remember who I was before all this went down. But that only gets you so far until you do have to just fall to your knees and understand, like, I was in a version of hell, and my version of hell lasted quite some time. And honestly, that version of hell still shows up in my life, you know, through infertility and then the consequences of now being 20 years postmenopause as a woman still in her 30s. It still wreaks havoc on my body. And there are moments where I still revisit that hell, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I once heard Carolyn Mace, who, for those of you guys who don't know, she's a medical intuitive and she's quite a mystic. And she kind of broke chakras. Like, she made chakras really kind of make sense at a time where they were a little esoteric. But I once heard her say, she was counseling someone live and they said, "Carolyn, I've been going through this for years. When is it going to be over?" For anyone who knows her, she has a really to the point message. It can be a little abrupt. And she said, "How arrogant that you think that your dark night of the soul needs to happen on your human time.
Mm.
And a dark night of the soul lasts as long as it lasts.
Yeah, I'm just taking that in. Like, for those of you who don't know what the dark night of the soul is, it's basically when you have to go through the darkness to like evolve your soul. That's like the most simplistic way of saying it, right? Is that accurate, do you feel?
It's a spiritual crisis.
Yeah.
Where you're brought to your knees in the most profound ways. And there is no easy fix, right? There is no do X, Y, and Z and you'll feel better. And all the things you might have ever done to feel better fall short.
Yeah.
And it's that longing to heal at a time where none of the tools are functioning and you actually have to sit in the pain for as long as the pain lasts. I don't even know.
Yeah. No, but I so appreciate this conversation because like it's conversations like this that are the whole reason why I started the Point of Pain podcast, honestly, because I think it's so easy. And if anyone, like when they look you up and see your beautiful picture on the show notes and, you know, see your website and your Instagram following and all the things, and, you know, you bring truth to every post and everything that you share for sure. But there's still a level of, oh, it couldn't have possibly been that hard, right? Like we just can't imagine what the truth of the pain and everything really is. And I think a conversation like this just really, I just appreciate how much you're going there and just letting us know like, no guys, this was brutal, you know, because I think that's part of it. Like people just, when they're going through something so brutal, they think they're the only ones. It's such a healing, important thing for people like you to share, like the truth of what really happened, you know?
Yeah, or that you failed because you're going through it. You know, I had so much shame around having had such a hard time, or stigma, maybe is the word. There was a lot of stigma around it. I was stigmatized in some ways.
Like, what do you mean that like you weren't able to like feel better or like evolve faster or something in the process? Is that what you mean?
No, I mean, I was just basically in no small way, there was a prejudice against me. Like I was damaged goods. Because I had gone through such a hard time and because I was hysterical in audible and noticeable ways to people who knew me best and unconsolable at times, there was this idea that I maybe would be happy, but never successful, or that my potential was limited. I was fiercely and ferociously underestimated and judged. And I think that that happens a lot when people are at their breaking point and they're going through something that is unconsolable or is hysterical. It's overwhelming to people who have no experience or touch points. You know, people can be sympathetic, like, I'm so sorry you're going through that. But I think, Nitika, one of the things that you and I have connected on as friends, you know, aside from professional colleagues, we have this dual relationship where we're tight in multiple ways. But I think on the friend side is that we really empathize with one another. And there's a big difference between sympathy and empathy. And I received a lot of sympathy, like, get well, you'll be better. God only gives you what you can handle. Trust. Oh, I'm so sorry. Ouch. Ah, I can't even imagine. And that is cool. You know, that's how the best people can show up. But the empathy is, oh my God, I'm not feeling this for you. I'm witnessing you and your strength because I know you've got this, but I so get how hard this is. I really get it. And it's going to be okay, right? Sympathy can come across, in my experience, as a little condescending. What I came up against, and I'm just being totally honest, was a lot of sympathy that then felt almost led into stigmatization. And so it took me, in addition to going through when I went through medically, biologically, psychologically, and spiritually, it took me another few years to dig myself out of the stigma of having had such a hard time so publicly. And I think now, 20 years later, with a really successful career and a great marriage and a book coming out and a multiple six-figure business, people don't think of me that way anymore, right? The people who've known me my whole life, I've trained them to see me in a new way over time. It's been an interesting path getting there, for sure.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I so relate to that, Jen. I mean, everything that you said, I relate to, but I especially love what you brought up around sympathy and empathy, because I think that's something that, you know, I hear a lot. I actually was just responding this morning to an Instagram DM from a girl that follows me that I don't know, that was like going through a really horrible health crisis. And she's like, no one understands, like no one understands what I'm going through. I don't know what to do. I feel so alone. Sometimes I think it's like an epidemic that people don't know how to show up for people. You know, like, what do we do if you're going through something like that and you're feeling like no one knows how to show up for me? Like, what would you do? Like, what would you tell them? What do people do when that's going on?
So there's a book called Geeks and Geezers. It's by Warren Bennis, and I'm forgetting the other guy's name, but they're basically these two researchers on leadership. And they wrote this whole book on leadership, and they look at what are young leaders and old leaders who are very effective? What do they have in common? And they looked at all these different demographics of, like, you know, this, that, or the other thing. And what they discerned at the end of the day is that they've all been through something that's been crazy hard, that's put them in a category of their own. Having gone through that crucible, they've actually have developed themselves in such a way where they've have exceptional leadership skills. And so, you know, when you're in your crucible and there's a lot of sympathy, but no real empathy, it's important to understand what the potential here is. To just take a step and say, you know what, you're on your edge and nobody gets it. And that's real. So hold that, right? That's painful. It's important to just name that. Ouch. That's isolating. That feels alone. That's painful. One thing we do have in our power, despite the suffering that we will go through as humans, inevitably all of us, is how we go through it. And we can go through it feeling really victimized by it, which is totally valid. And I've been there. And yeah, anyone else who's been there, raise your hand. You know, like, we've all been there, and it's totally valid. But we don't want to live there. And I think it's really important to just say, like, you know what? Nobody gets this. And I'm in my crucible right now. I'm becoming something that I don't even understand. And to sit with that and sit on the edge of that with almost like a sense of awe or wonder or curiosity, even though it's so hard when you're in the pain, right? But if we can develop some sense of objectivity where we feel the pain without becoming the pain, right? Like, ouch, I feel that. That's painful. They said this thing to me. It was demeaning. I'm going through this harsh thing. I went to them for support and I didn't get it. Double up, double down on the pain. But can I witness that pain and still have a sense of objectivity around it so that I can continue on my path? Because here's the other thing. I have this horrific story. We all have a horrific story. You know, there was very little of true empathy at the time when I needed it the most, a lot of sympathy. What happened was, is that I still had this shift from post-traumatic stress into post-traumatic growth. I went from post-traumatic stress disorder into explosive post-traumatic growth. And post-traumatic growth is a concept emerging out of positive psychology, where after we have some sense of true trauma, there's this whole phenomenon where our brain sprouts all these alternative neural pathways that is a complete neural growth spurt that allows us to not only transcend where we were, but emerge almost with superhuman capacities. That's my language, not the literature's language on this, but I'm just paraphrasing. It's almost like superhuman capacities where we've been through something that was so horrific. We looked it in the eye and now we have so much more courage, so much more bravery, so much more tenacity, so much more resilience, and so much more deep empathy for others that we're capable of more. Capable of more leadership, capable of more love, capable of more empathy for those other people who are in our periphery that are suffering, but ultimately capable of a stronger, better life. And so those moments are harrowing when we feel like nobody gets us. But I think if we can understand that they're not the end game and that there's something deeper emerging because of them, and if we could stick with them instead of checking out of them and stay with it, we're really on a powerful path.
Oh, that's so beautiful, Jen. Honestly, it gives me a lot of comfort. And I hope it gives people comfort that are listening too, just to hear that. I mean, post-traumatic stress to post-traumatic growth is So profound. Because I mean, I know one of the things, you know, that really bonds us as sisters and friends is that we've both been through a lot with our health. And yeah, I just think it's so beautiful. And the thing I hear that you're saying is, it's almost like when you're feeling that lack of empathy from other people and it's really painful, you need to start figuring out how to have empathy for yourself, as hard as it is. And you are where you are, and that it's painful in that moment. So I really love that. I think that hopefully that'll help a lot of people figure out how to get through those tough moments. But one of the things that I want to understand, so like you're going through this journey, you're rewriting and reworking the steps of, you know, from hysteria to pulling things together and, you know, getting yourself together and walking through everything as gracefully as you possibly can as a young woman. And then you said that you got like a tarot reading and it changed the trajectory and helping you understand that you needed to follow the phases of the moon and learn more about the planets and the cycles. And I mean, I've been friends with you for 5 years. I still feel like I don't totally understand this whole moon thing. I'm not going to lie. You know, I just look to you and I'm like, what's happening? And then you text me back and I'm like, okay. But I don't understand, like, what does it mean to follow the phases of the moon? Like, why do we follow the phases of the moon? What is that all about? I feel like I just heard your evil laugh, like, ha, 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 ha. Like, you have no idea. There's so much to uncover.
No, it's just like, let me boil it down.
Okay.
And let me really tie it into this concept of the point of pain. When we have pain, I think it's really important to understand that even though it feels pervasive and like it's never going to end, like when you're sick and you really have a bad flu, it's hard to imagine ever feeling well again. So I get it. But the truth is, everything's impermanent. Our pain is impermanent. And it's cyclical sometimes. One of the most beneficial things, in addition to learning how to work with the phases of the moon, I ever really gave myself the gift of understanding was how to sit with pain long enough to presence myself to it. So in the presence of it, it does its own thing and kind of like evaporates. And that's something we're just not taught in our society. We're taught to medicate it. We're taught to manipulate it in some way so it feels lesser. Go to the movies, call a friend, have a drink, eat some sugar, go exercise, take Advil. We're not really taught how to be with what is. And in the being with what is, there's this thing that happens and it's really impermanence. And impermanence means it's going to shift and it's going to change and it's going to evolve and it's going to move on. And it's a beautiful dance knowing that like everything is impermanent. And so when we start to talk about what the moon's phases are, the moon's phases are the relationship of the moon to the earth, given the earth's relationship to the sun. I just want to like kind of go over some basics. The earth goes around the sun and the moon goes around the earth, right? We get that? Like, the moon is our satellite. It keeps us grounded on the planet. The earth is in a elliptical pattern that goes around the sun. So there's multiple cycles, so many cycles. There's infinite cycles happening in every moment. But the moon cycle is the cycle of the moon being in a place where it can receive the light of the sun and reflect it back to us on earth and then lose the light of the sun and seemingly disappear in the sky. And that's the journey from new to full back to new again. If the moon does lots of things, like it controls our gravity, right? Like we're all here right now on the earth because the moon is letting us have this gravitational pull where we can actually be on the earth, right? The moon raises the ocean's tides. So the moon has a deep impact on water. And we as humans are 70-some-odd% water. So the moon has this incredible impact on our life. Then we just take it for granted. How could we possibly comprehend how much the moon is impacting us? But when we start to study the cycles of the moon and the phases of the moon and the cyclical journey of the moon, we realize that the moon is constantly in flux, or the moon's relationship to the earth is constantly in flux. So there's this waxing period that happens from the new to full moon. And then there's this waning period that happens from the full to new moon. Every single month, there's a new cycle. So said this way, in 1 year, we'll experience all 12 zodiac signs based on the sun's position in the sky relative to where we are on earth. It takes a whole year to experience the whole zodiac from the position of where how the sun seemingly travels through all 12 signs. But the moon does that every single month. The moon goes through all 12 zodiac signs every single month. Every single month, we have a complete journey with the moon. And that's like saying every single month we have a year.
Wow.
Every single month we have a year. So if we can start living our lives in these microcycles instead of these metacycles, there's a lot of power that comes along with it. Now, in addition to that, the moon also relates to our reproductive cycles, our feminine cycles, our intuition. And so the moon pulls on the deeper pieces of us that aren't so logical. It pulls on our subconscious. It pulls on our dreams. It pulls on our creativity. It pulls on our fertility, literal or metaphorical fertility. And it's a cycle of growth within bigger cycles of growth. So when we can start to really tune into how we feel with the phases of the moon, we have more information on how to really sculpt and tailor our self-care. And I think that that is a complicated description, but basically like a 101. We can go really much deeper, but what comes up for you as I say that?
Yeah, I mean, I love how you're asking me. You're asking me questions because I my head is like spinning and like excited at the same time. So I imagine people listening are probably feeling a similar thing. I just think that, yeah, I've seen all of these different oosts and conversations, and we've had conversations about, oh, there's a new moon and a waxing moon and a waning moon and a full moon. And I feel like, I mean, I'm a Cancer moon, I guess is the right way to say it, but you know, because you've done my chart 1 million times. So I am a very, you know, emotional, sensitive person, someone who is highly connected to the moon. So I feel like every time there is a change in the cycle, I feel it, even though I'm not well-versed in the cycles like you are, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'll check in with you or look on your Instagram or whatever and be like, oh, that's why this is happening. Like that makes total sense. So I feel like it must be so empowering to actually be in sync and understand, you know, those cycles on a larger spectrum, because it's not just happening to you. You actually are empowered to work with them, which is what you're saying, right?
Totally. And, you know, I think the biggest opportunity is not so much to be told what's happening. You know, like I think that that is almost like the Piscean era where we want like someone who knows and can give us the answers, right? Like, yeah. Just tell me what's happening. The real opportunity is to lean into the curiosity of how my mood, my needs, my emotional state shifts the duration of a lunar cycle. And is there a connection between the moon's phases and my emotional needs? And to lean into it as an experiment, you know, back to the idea that this has become really trendy, it's interesting to have had basically traded my ovaries for this wisdom, now see a mass trend around it happen. Embodied wisdom is really different than regurgitating information.
Mm-hmm.
And embodied wisdom means having really digested the information for yourself. And I think that that's the opportunity to potentially digest this information and see how it resonates for you. But to digest it means you have to study it. Like there has to be some sort of application and study because it's complicated. There's terms that you need to learn. And you have to actually practice it for a couple months to really understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I do with my clients in Lunar Logic Moon School and, you know, other offerings that I have, or, you know, there's so many different ways to do it. But when I first started this, I just tracked how I felt throughout the course of the month. Was my anxiety worse at full moons or better at full moons? Was my anxiety worse at new moons or better at new moons? And then I just realized, oh God, I'm batshit cray at full moons, but I feel really good at new moons. And when I got that, that was like, oh my God, the heavens have sung. I can at least understand that like I have different needs at different times of the month. So new moons became this like quiet time where I do like a lot of meditation, a lot of journaling, and I do rituals and I call things in. And then full moons, I would be like, should I even go out of the house? You know, like, but I started to learn that. And that gave me a sense of agency over something that felt so unpredictable and uncontrollable.
Oh my God, I love that so much. The thing I love about it is that, you know, we've talked about so many things already in this show, in this episode today, but I just get the sense that you went from feeling like a victim, which I did too. So I totally get that when you were like, yeah, I totally felt like a victim. I felt like such a victim. I got sick when I was 10. I was like, this is total bullshit, you know, and felt like everything was happening to me, to going to this place of like, okay, I'm going to figure this out the absolute best possible way that I can. And that is so empowering and so inspiring. It's like, I will forever be in awe of you because of that. I just don't know. I don't know many people that have been through the health conversation and struggle and truth that you have that turned it around in that way. And I know I tell you this all the time, but it's just really beautiful to witness. And one of the things that you said that really just struck me was you traded your ovaries for your wisdom. And I'm just like, damn, Jen, that is a, oh my God, that is a world of things in that one sentence. And I feel like, you know, one of the things that you and I talk about a lot is not having children. I've been very vocal about the fact that I've decided not to have children in large part because of my body and because of my health challenges. I just feel like we need to talk about it a little bit because I don't even know, like people who are listening, who are in that conversation or, you know, struggling with that, were there things that you did to understand this, you know, choice that your body kind of made for you around that? Like, how did you even wrap your head around the fact that like, this was your truth now, that you weren't going to have a child?
Yeah. You know, infertility is a whole...
I know. It's a whole episode.
It's a whole episode, you know, and particularly for... I mean, I think it's a point of pain for many women.
Yeah.
Whether it's struggling to get pregnant, whether it's needing fertility treatments to get pregnant, whether it's I've had one baby and now I'm struggling to have the second baby. Secondary infertility is a lens of infertility that often goes unnoticed. Or there's a whole other side of infertility is that my body's great. I have lots of eggs in reserve. I'm menstruating every month, but there's no partner.
Yeah.
And who am I going to have the baby with? And do I have the baby on my own? And that idea of like, everything in my life is awesome. I've got great friends. I've got a great job. I make good money. I'm healthy, but there's no one to share it with that's a viable candidate. And that is like a silent, that's a silent pain that many women who are craving and longing to have children also go through. So I just want to name those different versions of who may really be feeling that. Yeah. And I'm probably missing someone or something. So please forgive me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, I was so young when this happened. And as a teenager, I journaled every single night before I went to bed. I'm a writer for sure. It's like one of my things I do. And I started as soon as I could write, I pretended like I was a writer. Like I would just write in my journal and like pretend that all I ever wanted to be when I grew up was a writer. I always wrote. I just did. And I got into like, I didn't know it at the time, but automatic writing, channeled writing, where I would just do that. That's what I did. And I think I might've been 15 or 16. And this message came through that was really strong. I was channeled writing. And the channel told me that I wasn't going to have children of my own. That wasn't for me this lifetime. Like I wasn't going to be a mom in a traditional sense. As there's going to be a lot of children that would need me and I would serve in a way that wasn't traditional. But if I was to have children of my own, my whole life would be about those children, making sure I could pay for them and handle them. And that was just not going to align with this bigger picture that was coming through this message. And the message also told me I was going to move to San Francisco. Like it was just like, there was a lot of things in my life that actually did happen. And it was so eerie when that voice came through because it was so clear. I'm like, I don't know why, but I'm not going to have children of my own. Like I'm never going to be pregnant. I'm never going to have kids, which for a 15 or 16 year old to say with such conviction is a little strange. What the heck did I know? I was 15 or 16. And so I remember telling my boyfriend at the time and telling my mom at the time and telling my friends at the time. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. You know, like whatever. And so when I actually found out I couldn't have children, it was a strange sense of confirmation that this experience I had had was not only valid, but gave me information in advance. So I was somewhat prepared. So the understanding that I wasn't going to have the children, I was prepared for. I wasn't prepared for infertility later in life. And I wasn't prepared for my menopause journey. What happened for me was as a teenager, it was like matter of fact. And even through most of my 20s, it was matter of fact. And even through the beginning of my 30s, it was matter of fact. I got married to my partner when I was 30. He and I have been together almost 15 years now. And I didn't know what love was until I knew what love was. And I didn't know what love would have me want until I knew what love would have me want. And it wasn't until my mid-30s that love really wanted me to have a baby with my husband. Like not just any baby, our baby. I didn't know how much grieving I still had to do around this infertility thing. So I think that in my teen years, it was kind of like, oh, I get this. It was more intellectual. It wasn't emotional in the way that it became emotional until I really understood what love was. And I understood what love wanted. And love doesn't always want rational things. Like rationally, I can't have kids. We know that. But irrationally, I needed to have kids and I couldn't understand why I couldn't. And that's been the journey I walked for the last few years. And it's interesting how that happens.
Wow. I'm literally over here crying because I understand. Like, I mean, I don't understand your specific situation, but like I, as you said, have empathy for just that journey of like, life is so complicated. And I feel like, I mean, I'm 37 now and I don't have a partner. And so that, you know, as you mentioned, brings its own complications to it of like what the future will hold. And, you know, trying to find the right partner that also doesn't want children is like something that I have struggled with. And just in terms of my emotional thoughts around it. But I mean, I think the thing that brings tears to my eyes is like, I really understand like the grieving of not having children. It's so layered because even if we know it's the right thing and it's the true thing and that's what it's going to be and what it is, it doesn't mean that society doesn't have things going on. I mean, we've had, you know, so many friends that have had babies in the last several years and, you know, all of that that comes with it, like, how do you handle all of the, you know, outside world things that are happening or the pressure? Do you feel pressures from society or from your community or anything like that on top of your own internal struggles around it?
I have to name this for myself, which is that I went through, you know, if my initial cancer, if we just see this in like multiple crises, right? The first crisis was like, I didn't feel like my body could do what it needed to do. And then it turned into cancer. And then that turned into menopause, right? That was like crucible number one. Crucible number two was like, you know, I was post-menopause in this unrelatable way where my psychology had changed to such extremes that I had entered clinical depression and I had clinical panic, a panic disorder. That's another crucible, right? The crucible of being in the most loving, ridiculously awesome relationship, albeit it has problems at times, but like true, real love, and then not knowing what to do with that. Like, what's a family look like for us? It was just another crucible unto itself.
Yeah.
And so while I was in that crucible, no, it sucked. Like, I couldn't, like, it was really stinking hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I was jealous in a way that I'm not a jealous person.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what the feeling jealousy was.
Yeah.
Until I realized like, oh, that's what I'm feeling. I'm jealous. Oh, got it. Got it. Okay. That's that feeling. Okay, great. Now I know what jealousy feels like. Now I can have empathy for other people. And you know, like now I get it, but it took me a minute to really understand that I was jealous. And it took me a minute that I was jealous in a way that wasn't superficial. I'm jealous in a way that like, oh, these people who get to go off and have babies, their bodies can do something my body can't. Their biology can do something that my biology can't. They're making an offering to the world in a way that I can't. It's they're a different version of humans. You know, like I'm a subset of human that's not normal. Almost the entire human condition is defined by our ability to procreate. That's why we're all here. And so I had to actually just recognize how wildly different my experience is than the average human beings is. There was jealousy, there was pain, there was confusion, there was frustration, there was a different version of depression. Like, what is this all for? Why am I here? You know, it was like a little bit of an existential crisis. But what I've recognized and what, you know, I know we're moving towards the end of the podcast. So what I just want to really hammer home at this point is that to presence ourselves to the truth and to presence ourselves to, like, in my situation, like, oh, I'm going through this thing I didn't expect, right? Because that's the other thing. Like, I didn't expect it. I thought I was going to zoom through life, happy career woman, love and money and great clothes, you know, and that was going to be enough. And, you know, just if I worked harder and stayed more focused on my work, like, I could basically ignore this whole childbearing year thing. And that's what I was trying to do, you know, like...
Yes, I know. I know that very well.
Yeah. So when the universe or my spiritual development or just my humanity or, like, I'll say what love, when love cracked me open to this realization that I was in avoidance and there was so much more I had to deal with, I had to deal with that. And that's the point of pain, is that it's an opportunity to tend to ourselves in ways that we otherwise never would. It's an opportunity to get real, to develop psychologically, to develop emotionally, to develop our resilience, to learn how to feel deeper, harder, to learn how to expand our capacity to hold for ourselves and others. And no, who wants to hold more pain? Ouch. And there's an incredible richness that evolves when we get real and we welcome what is real. And there's this magic that happens. That's my experience. It becomes magical to just be like, oh, here's my shadow. And here's what's in my shadow. And whether that's my fault or not, you know, like, infertility is not my fault.
Yeah.
But my shadow is my responsibility. Getting right with that and being with it and doing what I need to do, therapy, writing, trying to adopt a kid. Adoption expeditions have been wildly unsuccessful.
And yes, we can laugh about it now, but yes.
Wildly unsuccessful. That's been a thing unto itself. Through that journey, I've gotten to know myself better. I've gotten to know my power, my strength. I've gotten to feel deeper. I think I've become more human in the process. And my humanity is really all I care about, right? It's my ability to connect to myself and connect to others. Everything else is just window dressings. I'm not going to say it doesn't sting at times, or maybe there's another bout of this somewhere around the corner that I can't see, but in a lot of ways I've dealt with it and it feels really good to have dealt with it. It feels like a huge success in my heart to have gone through what I've gone through and arrived at a sense of peace with it, even though that peace is somewhat impermanent too. And it ebbs and it flows like the moon. It's always in shift and flux. My core is like, okay, I've reconciled something that's unreconcilable. And that feels just damn good.
Oh, preach. Yes. I so resonate with that. Cause I was going to ask you, like, how are you dealing with this all now? And I feel like what I'm hearing from you is you've really learned what you need to take care of yourself, like whether it is therapy or, you know, tracking the moon or, you know, the different things that you've picked up and put down throughout the years. I just love that. And do you feel like you think about, like, self-care and self-love throughout the day, or is it more cerebral than that? Or, you know, what's your relationship to that conversation?
It's a good question. I will say that going through those, like, harrowing hairpin turns of life, right? When you're on your edge and you're like, oh God, I thought I was in the fast lane to happiness. And I realized, like, damn, there was a lot of the trunk in the car. I didn't even realize we're in there. And, like, now I got to, like, figure this out again, unpack, repack, unpack, repack. I think of it more along the lines of mindful self-compassion, which is the work of Dr. Kristen Neff, which is like, how do I presence myself to my pain and give myself what I need without becoming my pain, is a non-negotiable. Self-care to me is like, what am I doing throughout the course of my day to make my life easier or happier or kinder or more gentle or more nourishing? And in those hairpin turns, it's like, I just need something to take the edge off, basically. And then when you're not in those hairpin turns, and, like, life is more in autopilot, it's actually almost harder to prioritize really good self-care. That said, once it's in your bones, it's in your bones. I've made so many changes to my lifestyle since I was that 32-year-old, recently married, shooting star of success in my business and career, where I thought, oh, this is going to be it. I'm good, to, like, where I am now, 7 years later, which is I've really checked my ego, and my ego will always check me, you know, like I'm human. I'm not enlightened by any means, but my lifestyle has changed. You know, I've moved primarily upstate. I've taken myself out of a lot of dynamics with time and money that just weren't serving me. And so I've created a life that's really reflective of self-care and self-love, not moments or episodes of self-care and self-love. And so self-care and self-love is like the fabric of how I eat, breathe, and live. It's integrated in a way right now that feels really good. And I'm sure I'm going to have to integrate it in different ways come the next hairpin turn. But right now, yeah, I think it's just something that I live that is part of my everyday.
Yeah. It sounds like that you worked towards that. That wasn't you at 19. That's you, you know, today or the last couple of years, which I love. And I really resonate with that too. Cause I think, I mean, obviously I talk to people about self-love and self-care all the time. And people are always asking me about, you know, how to incorporate it and everything. And I'm just like, you just kind of have to start. And if it's like, you start with one thing and then you do that one thing, you know, and then 6 months later you do another thing or, you know what I mean? And then it becomes integrated, like you're saying, and it just becomes a lifestyle.
Yeah. I mean, I was so nowhere near here when I was 19, you know, like I basically yeah. had cancer and like then went out drinking. There was like that's what I did, you know?
Yeah,
like,
'cause you were 19. Yeah.
No more cancer. All right. Let's go drink cheap beer. Like what?
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing to put together. It's one step at a time, like cutting out gluten in my late 20s or early 30s. I forget when I did that. That was like a big deal when I realized I had celiac and it had to go. And like, there's been these big moments of change. And then there's been a lot of micro moments of change. But for those of you out there just trying to wrap your head around what the hell is self-care and self-love, you know, Nitika, you have the best definition. It's you become more committed to your happiness than you do your suffering. And because you're more committed to your happiness than you are your suffering, actually think about, is this action I'm taking right now taking me closer or further away from what I truly need? I think, Nitika, that definition is just the most profound definition. I love it so much. I quote it all the time. And I think that for other listeners out there, you know, just if you can just start to think like, am I more committed to my joy or my suffering? And if I'm more committed to my joy than my suffering, what choices am I making throughout the day that are making my suffering worse? You know, like going out, like had cancer and then going to binge drink was obviously not going to make my suffering any less hard. It was actually making my suffering worse. Being in my 30s and continuing to eat gluten after I realized I have a really bad autoimmune reaction to it isn't going to make my life better. It's going to make my suffering worse. And I think that those are big examples, but there are little examples about how we can make those choices all day, every day. And Nitty, you're the master at this. So I bow down to you on that.
You're such a sweetheart. And I appreciate that. I don't think I've shared that definition with my audience yet. And I came up with the definition, you know, self-love is being more committed to your happiness than to your suffering in every single moment because of the big moments of not being able to, you know, walk and not being able to move and being so sick, which was my story and my journey. But it relates to, as you're saying, every single moment, like even when I get up in the morning, you know, what time am I going to sleep at night? What do I feel like when I get up in the morning? What am I going to do the first few things? Like every single moment. And I think that that makes it a little bit more tangible for people because I find that the biggest frustration or complaint people have about self-love is they're like, what is it even? You know, it feels so esoteric and intangible. So thank you for bringing that up, my love, Jen. I have loved this conversation with you. It's one that I've been looking forward to for a while because as soon as I started the podcast, I was like, I can't wait to have you on the show because I know you so intimately and I've been so lucky and blessed to have you in my life as an advisor and soul sister and just like dear friend. And I think it's important that people understand like where you came from and how much you've had to really work through in order to share all of the wisdom, you know, trading your ovaries for your wisdom. I'm never going to forget that you said that. That was so powerful. So thank you.
And right back at you. I mean, how cool that we're gathering to talk about the dignity of pain and the potential that lies in pain. in my experience, I have just noticed that we as a society will do everything we can to manipulate our experiences of pain. And in the manipulation of our experience of pain, we're actually avoiding the most powerful teacher there is and thus propagating it, right? The more we run from it, the more we fear it, and the more we deny it, the more we repress it, the more we suppress it, the more we medicate it, the more that we push it away, the louder it gets and the scarier it becomes. And when we can learn to sit with it and dialogue with it and have a relationship with it, it becomes like the moon, transient.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason why I started the show. I mean, I hope it helps, you know, even one person know that they can handle the pain that comes into their lives and they don't have to run in the other direction from it. And if they can do that even for like 5 more minutes than they were able to do it before, like we've done something right. So thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you. And so much luck on this podcast adventure. I just know it's going to be so successful. And thank you for having me.
I love you. Thank you for being here, darling. Thank you so much for listening in on this episode of The Point of Pain. It's always such an honor to be with you. And I hope you gained some insight on how to process pain in your life moving forward. I would absolutely love to stay connected with you. And the best way to do that is by following me over on Instagram at Nitika Chopra. I'm constantly sharing my most tender moments, deepest insights, and letting you in on what's happening in my world over on the gram. So I hope to see you there. I'm sending you so much love and wishing you a beautiful rest of your day.